Welcome, Calvin Reeder, to Upcoming Discs. How you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me, man.
Well, no, we're glad to have you. And I did finally get a chance to see The Rambler. And boy, I definitely have a lot of questions after watching that one.
Yeah, man.
Well, I guess the first question I have to ask is, in doing a little research here, I saw on your own resume there's a short for The Rambler. Was this the same thing? And can you tell me the evolution from that to the feature film we saw?
Yeah, it was the germ of the idea. You know, the short actually stars me as the Rambler, and it introduces the girl character and the scientist character. And there's just the scenario where this, you know, mad scientist picks up the Rambler and takes him to this lonely outpost, and strange things happen. And that played Sundance, and then it had taken me a little bit to get the feature version made, and that's kind of how that happened. The short turning into the feature had a lot to do with the short playing Sundance.
Okay, when you finally got a chance to make the feature, though, can you tell me, when you looked at it again, what you had done as a short, what were some of the things that popped in your mind? It's like, well, now let me do this. What were some of the obvious things you wanted to take care of turning it into a longer form?
You know, it was all one thing. You know, when I saw the short, I realized that was what I was really doing was probing the unknown. Uh-huh. And I had only lifted up a little bit of that mystery and looked underneath it. So I feel like with the feature, I was like, all right, let's go crazy and really, really uncover this mystery, or, you know, expand this mystery, if anything.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, you say uncover this mystery, but now I maybe I'm showing my own ignorance here, but I got to tell you, after watching the film, I'm not sure I know what was real or not. Am I supposed to?
Well, you know, I always say I'm cautious with using the word real when it comes to movies.
Okay. Real within the universe of the film.
Well, I think every film creates its own universe, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, what's real in Bergman's Hour of the Wolf, what's real in El Topo.
Sure.
You know, these are the lineage of the film that I think I belong to.
Right.
I'm not saying I'm on the level of those masters, but that's who inspires me.
Uh-huh.
That kind of filmmaking, the surrealism and the unknown.
Well, it certainly is. I guess to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it seemed that the characters in the film weren't so much characters, but seemed to me to represent something, some aspect of the actual Rambler himself. Am I reading too much into this?
Oh, I think that's great. I welcome that. That's a fantastic interpretation.
And what about Dermot, is it Maroney?
That's right.
Well, so he's the guy who's got to carry this film, and he does this kind of deadpan throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
So we can't really even use him as an emotional center to try to guide us, because he's deadpanning the whole thing. So tell me a little bit about how he came on board and how you guys developed this character.
Well, he came on board through a director friend of mine who'd worked with him, and he was sent the script, and it all worked out from there pretty magically.
Uh-huh.
The sort of quiet, unaffected guy. I always think those guys are really funny.
Mm-hmm.
My first job out of high school was I was a construction worker, and I built houses.
Okay.
And I used to work with a lot of NOM guys back then, and a lot of those guys were just so silent. No matter what happened, refused to react.
Right.
And I loved that. I thought that was amazing, and I always wondered, what exactly would it take to get them to react to something? So I think that sort of silent thing was something I always thought was funny. And
sure.
That's something I developed in the short.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they're just NOM guys, but there's just that type of, like, quiet guy out there. A lot of them are framers or concrete guys or hang cabinets.
Uh-huh.
You know, certainly not all of them are that way, but there's a lot of guys out there that just don't talk.
Right.
I always thought that was hilarious. So Dermot did too. We wanted to see how far we could push it.
Well, you definitely pushed it. Although I don't think he cracks that veneer of stoicism the entire time.
Right on.
I mean, no matter how ridiculous or whatever is happening around him, I mean, he kind of just takes it in stride. Is the way I see him.
Yeah, and there's no reacting a little bit. You know, to the things that happen, you react all the way, and then you're in Owen Wilson territory.
Right.
You know, it's a screwball comedy.
Sure.
If you react very little, it's a sort of existential crisis.
Yeah.
Or conflict, anyway.
I'll tell you a movie that came...
And that's funny to me.
Yeah, I'll tell you a movie that came to my mind. You can tell me again whether this was an influence. What about Jacob's Ladder? Am I seeing a bit of Jacob's Ladder influence here?
Oh, I'm sure, man. That was that movie hit me so hard. I saw it in the theater when I was just a kid, and I'm sure it's in there. Maybe not completely deliberate, but yeah, that movie got to me.
Because to me, it's not so much that it's an imitation or a copy of that, but it seems to almost live in that same psychological place in the viewer's mind.
Man, that's really cool. I really like that movie.
You know, that's the way I look at it. And then you also have Lindsay, is it Pulsifer?
That's right, yeah.
Well, good. Just making sure I'm pronouncing everybody's name right. Now, she was in the other feature film that you did. I guess this is your second kind of feature film. So I've noticed you've used her twice. So is she going to be your kind of lucky charm like some of these directors have? Is she going to be in everything?
Yeah, she's kind of my Monica Vitti. She was definitely in the shorts and then even four or five shorts we made together before we even made the previous feature, The Oregonian.
Right.
We made four or five shorts and now two features together. And yeah, man. She's great. I'll use her as much as I can.
Well, tell our listeners what's so special about her. Tell her what you find so special about her.
Oh, man, she's... Well, first of all, I have no idea where her ceiling is.
Uh-huh.
No matter how hard I push her, there's nothing she can't rise to.
Yeah.
Second of all, she's very directable and doesn't complain about anything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really practical. But I think the thing that makes me like about her most is... makes me like to work with her most is... is her vulnerability.
Yeah.
When we're going through the nastiest stuff, and we only get three takes, it may be raining, freezing rain, or 110 degrees, she never loses that vulnerability that I think a good actor should have.
Yeah.
She can do it. And she's a pro. If she needs another take, she's the first to know it.
Yeah.
You know, she's amazing.
So now, I got to believe that she had some questions about what, or did she just go with it? I mean... Did she have some questions about what it was she was representing here, what she was doing?
When it comes to her actual performance, yes.
Yeah.
Overall, I think she has her own interpretation of it. But yeah, you know, on a practical level, she'll definitely ask about things like interpretation and what her character's trying to get across.
Sure. Now, do you mind sharing with us some of the notes you gave her?
I wish I could remember them. A little bit. I think there was just a few times when I wanted her to play it kind of more hard, a more hard exterior, and she would always maybe softening it up a little bit, and it worked a lot better.
Uh-huh.
Things like that. Just minor things. Like,
yeah.
Why don't I play this a little bit nicer? She's kind of rugged right now, and I don't know why. And I'd be like, maybe I don't know why either. So throw it at me and see what we got.
Right.
She's usually right.
Well, and how did she and Dermot get along?
Oh, famously. Yeah, that was no problem at all, man. They got along right away.
And I guess for him, you know, I would ask what kind of notes, whatever you gave him, but I guess for him, the whole thing is, you know, no matter what kind of crap comes at you, just pretend like it's nothing, man. Just let it
yeah,
roll off.
He didn't need a lot of direction, but I'd be surprised if he ever needed a lot of direction. I mean... More than ordinate. He's a pro.
Well,
he knows a lot about being directed a film.
Sure.
He's never going to do anything. He's never going to do like a power trip kind of thing. He's always going to stay right within the lines, and we'll just adjust from there.
Well, I got to tell you, this kind of movie doesn't look like that would even be possible. I think you had a guy who, if you had anybody who was running an ego thing, I can't see it working on a movie like this.
You're right, dude. Like, we wouldn't be done. We would just let the Bond company take over, and I'd move back to Muskogee.
Yeah. So, well, there had to have been at least somewhere along the movie, there had to have been a moment that he found it harder than others to keep up there. Is there a particular scene or a particular part in the movie that he just really felt hard to keep that veneer going?
Oh, I believe the vomit scene where you know, an actor crashes through a window and vomits in his face.
Uh-huh.
He definitely had a hard time with that one because he wasn't ready for the impact of the glass. Cause although it was, you know, fake glass, it
right.
felt real, and he actually got cut up a little bit.
Oh man!
And that directly followed by this like endless vomit blast. I don't think he was. I don't think he was about ready to laugh or anything about that, but I think he found that very, very challenging. And he was a little cross at me over that, but he was okay the next day.
Now, it looks like you filmed a bunch of this at Roswell, New Mexico. Boy, what a place to film a movie. How did that happen?
Well, we knew we wanted to shoot it in New Mexico because they offered that tax. Filmmaking is on sale out there.
Oh, yeah.
We found this great line producer who happened to be from Roswell, and he said he'd crack that town open like a piñata. And all the things in the script existed in Roswell.
Right.
And since it's such a small town, people aren't really messing with you. There's not a lot of cops. You know, you can steal shots and no one even knows you're stealing them. There's just a lot of less regulations. It's just freedom out there.
Well, now let me ask you a question. Now, I got to ask you this. Did you guys spend any nights watching the skies?
No, I, you know, when we weren't shooting at night, I was just trying to get as much sleep as I could.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other question is, you know, this is one of the few films I've seen lately didn't have any kind of a commentary. And boy, if ever a movie could have really benefited by sitting there and having the director and writer talking to you, this one seems like that. Is there a particular reason why you decided not to go that route?
Yeah, I think people would want it a little too much, and they'd be disappointed that I probably wouldn't reveal what they wanted. I'm more into the mystery of it. I want people to discuss it for themselves.
Uh-huh.
If they're a little disappointed that there's no commentary, you know, I'm sorry about that, but I definitely made it for people to discuss and consider on their own. And
right.
I don't view any interpretation of it as wrong.
Well, yeah, no, I wouldn't say so much a disappointment. I would just say if ever somebody were looking for guidance on a film, this might be that kind of film.
Maybe there can be some sort of collective guidance after the film gets out. Maybe there can be some type of support group. People can talk about what they've been through.
Uh-huh. Now, that prison in the beginning, was that a real prison?
That certainly was, and almost everybody in there was real prisoners, inmates.
Oh, no kidding. So you had the real deal going on there.
Yeah, they were great. The warden was a really great lady. She just she showed us where we could shoot. She gave us this long list of inmates that we could work with, and they're very directable and very eager to do something cool.
Well, so how did Dermot feel about being around the inmates?
He had no problem whatsoever. Like, when the camera was off, I saw him, like, lifting weights with the guys.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah, he mixed right with him. I think he was kind of happy to have that experience, honestly, strange as it sounds.
Well, I have to give you one compliment, too, in that the films like this often... What the director tries to do is try to accent anything by playing some kind of funny camera tricks or you know, playing with the video or the sound or trying to do something up. And yeah, you had those kind of, you know, weird crackling things that went on for a short time, but you seem to resist the temptation to have to over stylize. In other words, you allowed what played out on the screen to be your stylization instead of trying to also throw at people a whole lot of, hey, look at me being a filmmaker. Type of stuff. Was that something that was a conscious thought, or did that just never even enter your mind that was something people would do?
Well, I think you're kind of talking about that sort of maybe oversaturated Oliver Stone kind of thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes people just throw in on top of it. It never occurred to me to do that. Everything that's in the movie, all the bells and whistles, is very deliberate.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, that's about as much as we had time to pull off. As weird as this movie is, you might imagine that... it was very difficult to find funding, and what funding we did find was small.
Right.
So that meant we only had a few days, you know, we only had very little time to shoot this thing. And what I didn't have planned just wasn't going to happen.
Yeah. Well, and that leads me kind of to the question that this kind of movie definitely begs, and with the kind of budget and limitations you got, was there something that you had to leave behind that you kind of wanted in the film and just wasn't going to happen?
No, I was lucky enough to get it all. I've been planning this film for 5.5 years.
Right.
And even made, you know, like the short played Sundance in 2008. My previous feature played Sundance in 2011.
Right.
So I've been making shorts and features in between, but always working on the Rambler just to find that right combination of money and producer that would allow me to do whatever it was I needed to do.
Yeah.
But when it finally hit, I was like, okay, now it's my chance. There was a few opportunities that came up that would have severely limited the film, and we would sort of pass that over.
Well, and that's what I mean. That often happens. That's filmmaking sometimes, is you just don't have the money or the time to do everything you want to do. But it sounds like you managed to do that.
Yeah, I think it's foolish to do that. You know, there's always another option. If you don't have what you need, you can always make another movie. You know, cinema's been such a democratization. Anybody can make a movie. So if you have any talent at all, you can raise a little money on Kickstarter and make that film.
Sure.
In the in between, and wait for the bigger one when the right circumstance arrives.
Yeah. I also noticed you wrote the music in this kind of thing. Have you been doing that long, doing the music composition, writing songs and such?
I only did a little bit of In the Rambler, but all my previous stuff I did a lot. I guess you could say I was something of a musician, but a real musician would just laugh at me. But
well, because I did see your name pop up a lot in the song credits in the end.
Yeah, the songs the songs the characters. Like that's all written by me.
Right.
Some of the score is written by me, and yeah, I do that quite a bit. That's a part of my life for sure. Frustrated musician out here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, well, believe me, I know that part myself. So, what inspired what? Did the music help inspire the film, or was the film inspired by some of the music you put together?
You know, the film was inspired by music in general.
I got that
whole
impression.
Idea of the Rambler is Woody Guthrie, Rambler,
sure.
Jack Elliott,
yeah.
You know that. That Towns Van Zandt song, High, Low, and In Between.
Right.
Line, us ramblers will get the traveling done.
Right.
And that's exactly what made me, like, yes, us ramblers will get the traveling done.
Yeah.
And we're going to make this crazy movie.
I did kind of get that impression. I was kind of glad to be on about that. So what's next up for you? What are you going to be putting together for us next?
Well, you know, I have 3 film projects, and I just got to see what wins. There's a few... you know, internet and TV series ideas as well.
Okay.
I'm just in that weird limbo that I think a lot of us indie guys end up in, where we have this thing, it's out, and we just got to see what it takes. So something's coming. I just don't know what it is.
Do you think you'll explore this territory again, or do you think from the short now to the feature, you got it out of you now?
I got that out of me, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, there'll be strangeness to be had, but that's done.
Okay. So you've explored this territory now. So you can't give us one thing coming up?
Well, I just wish I knew what it was going to be. I can't say I have traction on one thing more than another.
Well, what would you like? If you had your druthers and you had the access to the money and the stuff you needed, what would you pick to do next if you had that opportunity? Just, you know, this is what I'm going to do.
Well, you know, I got a feature called Sweetheart of the West,
uh-huh.
which I've been working on for a while.
Okay.
I would like to explore the drug movie, Sweetheart of the West. And there's also, I sort of have my take on the songwriter sells his soul to the devil. You know, that little crossroads story.
Crossroads story, yeah.
So
you're going to write some blues music for that?
I don't know.
You can't do a crosswords movie without blues.
Well, that's it. It wouldn't exactly be the crossroads, and it would be a very broken version of that story.
Okay. Well,
it can't be the real crossroads.
Right. But some of that idea.
Yeah, some of that.
Well, listen, I appreciate you spending the time with us. I don't know what that beeping was. I'm sorry, that'll probably be on our podcast there. But I appreciate
me.
I don't know what it was. It's kind of weird. But I appreciate you sticking with me here and with some of the technical difficulties. And look forward to seeing what you got coming up next.
Thanks for having me, man.
No, thank you. You take care and have yourself a good night.
All right, thanks. Sorry about that, guys. I jumped in, but I heard most of the interview. Thanks, Gino.
Yeah, it's no problem. Do you know what that was?
I have no idea.
Do you even know what I'm talking about?
The beep that was coming, that kept popping up?
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
No idea.
Okay. Well, I mean, like I said, if I can clean it up, I'll definitely try to clean it up. I just don't know if I'll be able to or not, though.
All right. Well, do what you can.
Well, you have a great one, too, and you take care, dude.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Take care, man.